Friend Shavua Tov, I want to thank the Friar and Zussman family for inviting me to participate in this this tribute. I want to say that it's also a schut on a personal level. Rabbi Yehuda didn't mention the most important thing, that we were former roommates in yeshiva. I'm sure that many of you have had the experience. Most of you are Shana Aleph, I assume. Is that correct? Yeah. Yes? Okay. So you know that when you see a guy who's Shana Bet, he looks to you to be like in the stratosphere. Like he's way up there. He's almost on the level of the Ramim. He's that like that hell. This guy like knows how to learn already. And he's kind of used to yeshiva. And so when we were roommates, which I think was the summer of 86, could that be? Yeah. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't have the white hairs that I have, but he's actually, I'm a little younger than he is actually. I was in a room with one of these really heavy duty Elter Bachrim, and it made a big impression on me. And so it goes without saying that when Rabbi Yehuda asked me to speak tonight, that I would say yes. Also, recently we've seen each other in the last few years, usually at shiva houses, and so we decided we have to find some other way to see one another. This so here that. We and this is that. Yeah, this is that. This is an askar. It's so close, but a big schus. Friends, I want to talk tonight about a story in Sefer Yehoshua, a sefer that often gets short shrift, and a particular story that I think gets short shrift. The story of Achan. Now, I know some of you guys have probably started since the beginning of the year like a Tanakh Bikias project. Like, you know, hey, I'm going to go through Tanakh this year and finally see what's going on in that book. So, you know, if I was doing something in Zechariah, I wonder how many, you know, often there's a lot of fallout by the time we get to Zechariah or something. But Yehoshua Perek Zayin, I imagine those of you that started this such a project actually got up to this story. How many of you have seen this story since you arrived in yeshiva? Okay, a small handful. Some of us maybe remember it from whenever we might have learned it in elementary school. What I'd like to do is I'd like to read through the story one time. And as we're going to go through, I'm going to ask a series of six questions going through. If you've sukkim, ask a question, move on. Question, question, question. So we have six questions. And then once we have six questions about this story, I want to propose one answer that elegantly answers all of them, tied up, and then we go to the sukkah and have refreshments. Okay, that's the aim for tonight. So let us begin. Everybody has the handouts, the two prakim? Yeah, we're getting there? Okay, good. All right, so I'm going to begin our read through with the questions. Okay. Just the background for this, right? This is after the story of the conquest of Jericho. We all remember the walls came a tumbling down, and Yehoshua had commanded Am Yisrael that when they storm the city, that they're not to take anything for themselves. Everything is to be burned, and all the items of great value, gold and silver, were to be put aside, what he called cherem, and those were to be used later on for the purposes of the Mishnah. That's the background. Here we go. Yehoshua, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. Vayimalu b'nei Yisrael ma'al v'cherem. Rabbi Yehuda, can I assume that the guys understand the Hebrew well enough? I can just move to the Hebrew. I don't need to translate. Not everyone. Okay. Yeah, the keywords. Good. Okay. So again, Vayimalu b'nei Yisrael ma'al v'cherem. They did this something terrible. A great betrayal. That's really what the word ma'al means. A betrayal concerning the cherem. Vayikach Achan ben Karmi ben Zavdi ben Zerach l'mate Yehuda min cherem. Vayichar af Hashem b'nei Yisrael. And our first question jumps off at us right off the bat. And that is, why does the Navi describe the betrayal as something that all of Am Yisrael did? Vayimalu b'nei Yisrael ma'al b'cherem. And then it says that only one person was involved, this person Achan. And then the end of the pasuk, Vayichar af Hashem b'nei Yisrael, everyone together. Now, this question already is asked by the Mefarshim right there on the story. And I'd like to read two approaches to how it could be that one person does an Avera and a Kadosh Baruch Hu is angry at everybody. And I want to read these two Perushim because I think each one of them is problematic. Okay? The first one is the Malbim, and it's actually very similar to the source that Rabbi Yehuda mentioned earlier. The Malbim says as follows, trying to understand this theological problem. He says, "Ki kol Yisrael kshurim ki guf echad." All of Am Yisrael are like one physical body. "Ad shekol ish ve'ish mehem yachosu alakal ki yichus ever echad min hagviya el hagviya." We're all just different limbs of the same body. One of us is a hand, one of us is a foot, one of us is an elbow. We're all part of the same body. And just as if a person has, let's say, an infection in one part of their body, untreated, the infection spreads and can damage the entire person. So because Achan took from the cherem, it's as if everybody did it. Just like no one can say, "Well, my liver is really sick, but other than that, I'm fine." Right? You know, if you have a serious problem with your liver, your whole being is going to be not fine. And this is what the Malbim says. This is difficult because this is just something that is entirely foreign to anything else we know in biblical or rabbinic thought. It is one thing to speak about responsibility one for another. Some of us might even be familiar with the phrase "Kol Yisrael Arevim Ze Baze." Right? Is that a phrase that we've heard? We're all, yeah. But what's really important about that phrase is the last word, which is "Kol Yisrael Arevim Ze Laze Bemitzvot," meaning it's only said in a certain context. For example, if I have made Kiddush already and I come home from shul and my family members have not yet made Kiddush, even though I have been Yotzei already Kiddush, I can make Kiddush for someone else who has not yet heard Kiddush because Kol Yisrael Arevim Ze Baze B'mitzvot. But where have we ever seen the notion that if one person does an Avera, and apparently, as we're going to see, does that Avera in private and no one knows about it? He did it in a stealthy kind of way. How could it possibly be that everyone is responsible for that? I mean, the meaning of that, of what the Malbim says, you know, yeah, one person doesn't avera, but everyone can get clobbered for it. I mean, think about what we just went through on the Yamim L'Raim. You know, all of us are standing here, you know, chatanu, ashamnu, and feeling all holy. Well, what was the purpose of all that? If there's even one guy somewhere, anywhere, in America, here in Israel, who was eating a ham sandwich and didn't come to shul, are we all going to get zapped because of that one person? Where have we ever heard of such a thing? Where do we ever see in Tanakh such a thing? What, in Tanakh, no one else ever did an Avera? And if someone did an Avera, obviously, Ein Tzadik Ba'aretz Shelo Yechata. None of us are Tzadikim perfectly. We all do Averot all the time. Some more, some less. Where do we ever see anywhere else that one person does an Avera and the entirety of Klal Yisrael is held responsible? So this mashal that the Malbim gives us here sounds nice, but when you test it out, when you tap at it, when you push, it doesn't hold water. It's not something that we see really anywhere else. Another approach that we find is that of the Mitzudat David. Mitzudat David says as follows: how could it be that all of Am Yisrael are held accountable when one person does an Avera? He says, "Al shelo shamru ze et ze." Because they were not watching over one over the other, ma'aleh aleihem hakatuv ki'ilu kulam ma'alu. It's as if, therefore, everyone took. So the Mitzudat David seems to expect that they were all responsible for each other, and since they weren't watching over each other, and one of them took, everyone gets zapped. But what does the Mitzudat David exactly expect? How this guy snuck out in the middle of the night and went and got into the cherem. Okay, so maybe the guards that were standing duty at just that juncture, just that point, didn't do their job properly. Maybe someone who had seen Achan sneaking out in the direction of the cherem maybe should have said to him, "Hey Achan, the cherem is over there. What are you going to do?" Maybe. But how many people could possibly have been responsible for a lapse in the guard duty that was there? Al shalosh shamru ze et ze. How can you hold all of Klal Yisrael responsible if that is really the approach? So we have, these are the only two mefarshim on the main mefarshim on the story that I know of, and it doesn't seem to really answer the enormity of this question that one person does an avera and the whole of Am Yisrael is blamed for it, and as we will see, is punished. That's question number one, and is the question. Question number two. I want want you guys to look, I'm going to ask for a little participation here, in Pasuk Aleph, I want you to look at how Achan's name is listed. It says, Vayikach Achan ben Karmi ben Zavdi ben Zerach l'mate Yehuda. What strikes you as unusual about the way in which his name is presented to us? What would be the normal way for the Tanakh to present a new character to us? What would it tell us in terms of his name?
Achan ben Karmi.
Yes, Achan ben Karmi, and maybe l'mate Yehuda. But this gives us his whole genealogy all the way back to Yehuda. Achan ben Karmi, ben Zavdi, ben Zerach, l'mate Yehuda. Most of these names don't appear anywhere else in Tanakh. They don't have any context for us. So I raise that as a smaller question, but it's a question nonetheless. Okay, now we move on. Pasuk Bet. The Navi departs from the issue of Achan and what he did, and we move on to a different topic. The Navi says, "Vayishlach Yehoshua anashim miyericho ha'ay asher im beit aven mikedem beit el vayomar aleihem lemor alu viraglu et ha'aretz." So he's sending out spies because Yehoshua, he's unaware of what has gone on. He doesn't know that Achan is taken from the Cherem. Yehoshua, being a general, is now planning the next battle, and so he sends out spies. Vayelu anashim viraglu et ha'ay, and off they went. Pasuk Gimel, vayashuvu Yehoshua vayomru elav. Al Yaal Kol Ha'am, we don't need to send everybody. Kel Paimi, Shokeshloshet Alefimi, Shialu V'yaku Et Ha'ay. Al Tiaga Shama Et Kol Ha'am, we don't need to tire out the whole army. Ki Me'at Hema. Ve'alu Min Ha'am Shama, Kishloshet Alefim Ish. So Yehoshua sends 3,000 people. Ve'yanusu Lifnei Anshei Ha'ay. And they just dissipate, they disappear. They run away from the townsfolk of Ha'ai. And here is my third question. When we look at this battle, it sounds like there was no battle. I'll read it again. Pasuk Dalet. Ve'alu min ha'am shama kishloshet alafim ish. Ve'yanusu lifnei anshei Ha'ai. It doesn't say they started to fight. Some soldiers fell. The anshei Ha'ai moved out towards them, took the battle into their turf. It sounds almost as if the force that Yehoshua sent, they got there, and as soon as they got there and saw the Anshei Ha'ai, they ran away. What? Doesn't sound like it was even a fight, or even the beginnings of a fight. That's my third question. Let's read on. Pasuk Hei, Vayakum mehem Anshei Ha'ai kishtoshim v'shisha ish. Then there was a fight, because they were running away. There were casualties. Vayadefum lifnei hashar ad hashvarim vayakum bamorad, right, all the way back down, because Ha'ai is up like on Route 60. Any of you, those that go to Gush Etzion southward or to Beit El northward, it's the top of the mountain. You know, it's the mountain range from there. Basically, if you go east, you're going downhill all the way down to Yericho, to the Arava. Vayakum bamorad. So as they were descending back down to Yericho, that's where they were slain. Vayimas levav ha'am, vayhilamayim. And of course, everybody is now totally beside themselves. Pasuk vav. Not only everybody is beside themselves. Yehoshua too. Vayikra Yehoshua simlotav. Vayipola panav arza lifnei Aron Hashem ad ha'erev. Hu bezikne Yisrael. Vayalu afar al rosham. Vayomer Yehoshua, aha, Hashem Elokim, lama he'avarta ha'avir et ha'am hazeh et ha'yarden, latet otanu b'yad ha'emori la'avidenu, v'lu ho'alnu v'neshev be'eber ha'yarden, halavai that we wouldn't have crossed this far. Just keep us on the other side of the Yarden. What do we need all of this tzuris for that we're getting here? We're fighting and it's not working. Forget about what you promised me in Perek Aleph, that we would never have to really fight, that it would just be a cakewalk. Bi Adonai, ma omar acharei hasher hafach Yisrael oref lifnei oivav. How am I going to rally the troops when we've had this type of terrible defeat? Moreover, v'yishmu haknani v'chol yoshvei haaretz v'nasabu aleinu v'yichritu et shmeinu min haaretz u'mata sedesh shimcha gadol. And you know who else is going to hear about this defeat? The Knanim that we're supposed to be fighting soon, they're also going to hear that this little place, Ha'ai, had this major victory over us. So we can all well understand Yehoshua is very upset. This is not what he was told would happen, and he has no understanding of why it happened. Pasuk Yud, Hashem's response to Yehoshua. Vayomar Hashem Yoshua, Kumlach, Lama ze ata nofel al panecha? Now, that phrase, Lama ze ata nofel al panecha? Why are you falling on your face? It sounds to you like a Kodesh Baruch Hu is short with Yoshua. It's kind of like, you know, when a little kid is throwing a tantrum, a fit, you know, 2-3 years old, and splat out on the floor, you know, and a parent says, get up, what are you crying about? I'll give you something to cry about. I mean, and what did Yoshua do? Yoshua doesn't know. Yeshua doesn't seem responsible for what happened. How could he possibly be responsible or know even what's going on? So my fourth question, is why is Hashem short with Yoshua? And then I'll ask another question on that. Notice the timing of all this. The timing of Hashem's informing Yoshua about what had happened. Which is the next pasuk. Let's just read that. Hashem says in pasuk Yud Aleph, Chata Yisrael, V'gam avru et briti asher tziviti otam, V'gam lakhu min acherem, V'gam ganvu, V'gam kichashu, V'gam samu bichlehem. So he tells Yoshua now that someone took from the cherem. But why now? Why not as soon as it happened? Think back to what we might recall from the story of the Egel Azav, when Moshe Rabbeinu is at the top of Har Sinai, and Am Yisrael do the Egel. And right then and there, Hashem says to Moshe, Lech re, ki shichet amcha. You have to now go down. Something bad has happened in your absence. So we would have expected that the time for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to tell Yoshua about this act, which he had no way of knowing that it had happened, that Achan took from the cherem, should have been right at that moment, that night, the next day. But Hashem seems to let things move on. Sends out the spies come back, sends out the forces get killed. And then only once Yoshua is in a whole tiddy about this whole thing, only then Hashem tells him, why the time delay? And I'll add to that also, look at the way in which Hashem describes what had happened. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Chata Yisrael! He doesn't even tell him that there was one person. Makes it sound like, wow, all of Am Yisrael were involved in this. The Gam Avru et Briti Asher Tziviti Otam. The gam lakhu, plural. They took from the cherem. The gam ganvu. The gam kichashu. And they all deny it. What do they all deny it? They don't even know about it. This is like overkill. Rhetoric overkill. Gam kichashu. The gam samu bichlehem. And they're all stuffing their pockets. Really? They're all stuffing their pockets? It's one guy. So it's all out of proportion to what happened. Let's read on. Hashem continues. Pasuk Yud Bet. Velo yuchlu b'nei Yisrael lakum lifnei ovehem oref yifnu lifnei ovehem ki ayu lecherem. Hashem promises it's going to continue to be like this. There's going to be one defeat after another so long as the cherem, the stolen goods, remain in the hands of the camp of Am Yisrael. Lo osif liot yimachem im lo tashmidu acherem mikir bechem. And so, this is what you need to do. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Kum kadesh et ha'am. Ve'amarta hitkadshu lemachar. Kicho amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Cherem bekirbecha Yisrael. Lo tuchal lakum lifnei oivecha ad hasirechem hacherem mikirbechem. And to find out who did it and where it is, this is what you need to do. Pasuk Yudal. V'nikravtem baboker l'shiftechem. I want you to bring all of the shvatim, meaning all of Am Yisrael, together, gather them all together. V'haya ha-shevet asher yilkedenu Hashem, literally, the shevet that Hashem ensnares, traps, yikrav l'mishpachot, you will take that shevet and you will then bring forward all of its clans, all of the big clans within that shevet. Yikrav l'mishpachot. V'ha-mishpacha asher yilkedenu Hashem, and then the clan that is trapped, or ensnared, we'll see what this means in a moment. Tikrav the batim, you'll take that clan, and then all of the families that are part of that clan, you'll bring all those families together. The habayit asher yilkedenu Hashem, and then within the family that God traps or ensnares, yikrav lagvarim, you will then take all of the men in that family. V'haya hanilkad b'cherem yisaref ba'esh. Then the guy that is then trapped or ensnared, he will be taken out and burnt down. V'et kol asher lo ki avar et brit Hashem v'chi asa nevala b'Yisrael. Now, what does this mean? This trapping, this ensnaring. The Radak explains that this is what happened.
Yoshua gathers all of Am Yisrael for a trial. It's a trial, the Radak says, that is carried out in front of the Aron HaBrit. And what Yoshua did in the first stage was to line up the Nesiim of all the Shvatim. 1, 2, 3, all in a line. And the Radak explains that Yoshua would ask each Nasi to walk across before the Aron. I don't know if this is getting videoed as I walk off stage, but this is for you guys. So each Nasi would have to walk in front of the Aron. If a Nasi managed to walk unimpeded in front of the Aron HaBrit, this was a sign that his Shevet was scot-free. But if he asked a member, or a Nasi of a Shevet, to walk in front of the Aron, and as the fellow was walking, suddenly his feet had glue, and he got stuck in place, nilkad, ensnared, trapped, that was a sign that his Shevet was the guilty Shevet. Okay? And then they would do that further. They would take the clans of that Shevet and ask the head of each clan to walk across, etc., etc. This is how the Radak understands that this process was done. Now, I want to try, there's an element about this whole process that I find deeply troubling. And I'm going to ask for some audience participation. All of you are now going to participate in this. We are now going to split the audience here into, as it were, Shvatim. Okay? So, everybody from this pillar over here, okay, you guys are all Shevet Reuben. Okay? And you guys here, all right, are all Shevet Shimon. Okay? And everyone over here is Shevet Yehuda. Okay? All right? Now. Okay. So, Yoshua gathers everybody together. Okay? Now, what, I ask you, what do you think is the feeling in Am Yisrael? How are people feeling? They know there's going to be a trial. How are people feeling? Anybody? If you're just an average member of Am Yisrael, you don't know what's going on, you just know there's going to be a trial here. Find a guilty party. What are you feeling?
Anxious.
A little anxious? Okay. But you didn't take, right? So why are you anxious?
Well, you know, you're going to go through an experience and sort of test like that. No matter how innocent you were, you'd still feel worried.
Uh-huh. Okay. Can anyone else think why you might be worried even if you know you didn't do it?
Like when you drive and you see a cop, even though you're doing everything right, you're still scared.
Oh, wow. Oh, I like that. Okay. I think that's what the lady here was suggesting. Yeah?
Maybe someone else in your tribe.
Okay, someone else in your tribe, or maybe someone in your family, right? You know, I didn't do it. Who knows? Did one of my kids do it? So everyone is on Shvilkis, okay? This is a really nerve-wracking sort of thing, okay? So all of the Nesiim line up, okay? So now Yoshua says to the Nasi of Shevet Reuben, please, pass by. And of course, the Nasi of Shevet Reuben doesn't have any idea, maybe. And so he's trying to think, you know, how can he outfox the Aron, you know, maybe do a spin move or something like that. Whatever, maybe not. He walks across unimpeded, and he makes it to the other side. Shevet Reuben, you guys over there, what are you feeling?
Yeah.
Woo! Yeah. Guys in Shimon, what are you feeling? What's that? You're not happy for your friends in Reuben, are you? Okay, and here in Yehuda, the same thing. Maybe you are a little happy for your friends in Reuben, but also the screws are now a little bit tighter, right? It wasn't Reuben. That means there's now a slightly greater chance that it's my Shevet. Okay, good. Okay, now. Next, Yoshua calls to the Nasi of Shevet Shimon. And he also doesn't know, but he manages to walk by unimpeded. And now, Shevet Shimon, what are you guys feeling?
Yeah.
And Yehuda, what are you feeling?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. You know, it's one more down. You know, who is going to... Then comes the turn of Nasi Shevet Yehuda. And the guy walks across. And as he's walking, he suddenly is stuck in place. Okay? Now, what are you guys all thinking? What are you feeling?
Yeah.
What? All right, probably not happy, but, ooh, wow. And you guys in Yehuda, what are you feeling?
Yeah.
Uh-oh, this is bad news.
right? Really bad news. And then the whole process is repeated over again, now just within Shevet Yehuda. Now, you can understand that at the end of the day, who gets picked? Who is ascribed the blame? Achan alone. In other words, everyone who was innocent eventually gets sent home. But Rabosai, think of the laundry bills that build up here, all the schmitzing that goes on until then. And here is my big question about this. Why does HaKadosh, this is all mandated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why does he prescribe such an elaborate system of identifying the perpetrator when it's going to have to put all of Klal Yisrael to varying degrees through a really, really deep ringer psychologically until, not my Shevet, not my clan. Why? You know, it reminds me of, if you fill out a lotto card, you know, where you have to pick out six numbers, you know, and then they on the TV, they have someone who picks a ball, you know, that's flying in the air, and you have your card, right? And she announces the first number. The number is six, and you look on your card. Six, great, you're happy, right? Then the second ball comes out, and it's 13. And you go, I got a 13, wow, I got two already. And the number comes out, 24, and you pick 24. Wow, you've already made back the money that you spent on the card. Right, you're really happy. And then the fourth number comes out and you have it. Whoa, this is already something that I can go around and tell my friends about and feel proud about it. And then the fifth number comes, and that's big. As you go up with each number, right, the excitement level goes up and up and up. Think about those last few people that were left in Achan's family before they were sent home. Oh my gosh, the walls are closing in and closing in and closing in. Schwitz, it's all a big schwitz. Why? This doesn't seem fair. It just doesn't seem fair. So that is a big question. Let's read on a little bit more. We'll get to my final question. Back to the text. Pasuk Tet Zayin. So now the Navi tells us this is exactly what Yehoshua did. Pasuk Tet Zayin. Vayashkem Yehoshua baboker, vayakrevet Yisrael yishvatav, vayilaked shevet Yehuda, vayakrevet mishpachat Yehuda, vayokodet mishpachat Azarchi, ויקרב את משפחת הזרחי לגברים וילחד זבדי ויקרב את ביתו לגברים וילחד אחן בן קרמי בן זבדי בן זרח למטה יהודה. So they found the guy. פסוק יוטט. ויומר יהושע אל אחן בני סימנה חבוד השם אלוקי ישראל ותן לו תודה. תודה here means like vidui. Not thanks, but vidui. In other words, now that the system has picked you out, and it clearly got it right, so now we would like you to do a vidui on what you did. V'hagedna li me'asita al techached mimeni. Don't hold anything back. V'yan achan et Yehoshua v'yomar. Omna, yeah, it's true. I'm the guy. I'm the perpetrator. I did it. Chatati la'ashem elokei anochi, chatati la'ashem elokei Yisrael. V'chazot asiti, and he went into great detail about what he did. And this is what he says. This will be the last pasuk that we read. Va'ereh bashalal, I saw amongst the booty, aderet shinar achat tova, a really nice Babylonian cloak. That's what an aderet shinar is. A cloak that is from Babylon. And all this kesef and all this zahav. I wanted them, ve'ekachem, I took them, ve'hinam tmunim ba'aretz, betocho ali, ve'kesef takteh. And they're all stashed underneath my tent. Now, look at this list of things that Achan says that he took. A Babylonian cloak, a lot of gold, and a lot of silver. Which of those things kind of stands out as, I don't know, somewhat unusual?
The cloak.
The cloak, right? In other words, from time immemorial, Ganavim have always liked kesef and zahav, right? That's what you buy stuff with. That's money, right? Ganavim like money. What, and notice here, not only the presence of this unusual item, this Babylonian cloak, but it's the first thing that Achan mentions. So what is this Babylonian cloak? So I want to read to you what Rashi says, citing a Medrash. Okay, Rashi says the following. Says this Aderet Shinar, Itzdala Bavli, a Babylonian cloak. He says, Shekol melech shlo kana lo paltarin be'eretz Yisrael, lo nitkarara da'ato b'malchuto. In the ancient world, if a king in the ancient Near East didn't have a holding, a possession in Eretz Yisrael, then he didn't feel like he was a bona fide king. You kind of have it today. Who owns Jerusalem? Oh, well, Har HaBayit. The Saudis think they own Har HaBayit. The Jordanians think they own Har HaBayit. The Russians have part of Jerusalem they think they own. The Pope thinks he owns a few pieces of Yerushalayim. If you don't own a piece of Yerushalayim, you're not for real. So Rashi says that in the ancient world, kings felt they had to have a possession in Eretz Yisrael. If they didn't have a possession in Eretz Yisrael, then they just weren't shalem with their own kingship. Now, v'haya lemelech Bavel, palterin b'yericho, the king of Bavel, his possession, his holding in Eretz Yisrael was in Yericho, right, which is where they were. Ukshaya balakan loveshotam. And this king of Bavel, when he would come to Yericho, he would put on this coat. That's the coat. And it's so bizarre. So why does Acham take this? What is the message of this medrash? That's my last question. So to review all the questions that we had, we asked the major question. How is it that one person takes from the cherem and everybody is blamed and collectively punished, which we don't really find anywhere else in biblical or rabbinic thought? Number two, why is Achan's name spelled out so long, all the genealogy all the way back, Achan ben Zabdi ben Karmi ben Zerach l'mate Yehuda? The third question, why is it that when they went to fight against the Anshei Ha'ai, they got there and they just ran away, seemingly without a fight? Okay. The fourth question that we asked, why is it that a Kadosh Baruch Hu delays informing Yehoshua until after the fight? Why doesn't Hashem tell Yehoshua at the moment of the perpetration of the offense, just like at Chet HaEgel, Moshe Rabbeinu was told on the spot? And the fifth question that we asked is about this very strange way of identifying the perpetrator, which causes a lot of people a lot of angst along the way when they are innocent. Why not just find something more direct? Why not just tell Yehoshua through Urim and Tumim or whatever, this is the guy, go find him, go talk to him. And finally, what is the significance of this Aderet Shinar, this Babylonian cloak? Particularly, what was the Medrash really trying to tell us? That this belonged to the king of Bavel, and when he would come, this is what he would wear. Okay. Now, to answer all these questions, because they're all connected, I want to return to a part of the story that we kind of read through pretty quickly. And that is, right after the offense, the Navi told us that Yehoshua sent spies to Beit El, to the next target. Okay? I'd like to go back and look at that episode of the spies, and particularly their report. What they said. So let's look at it again. Pasuk bet, Vayishlach Yehoshua anashim miricho ha'ai, he sent them to Ai, asherim beit evi mikedim lebeit el, v'yom aleihem lemor, alu v'raglu ota aretz, v'yalu anashim v'yarglu ota ai, v'yashuvu Yehoshua. Now, I want to look at Pasuk Gimel very, very closely. I am going to read their response to Yehoshua, their report to Yehoshua. I am going to read it monotone, okay, which is certainly not the way in which they spoke it. But I would like to ask you, what tone do you detect in their words? What was the tone in which they said these things? Let's look at what they said. So, Pasuk Gimel. Vayashuvu el Yehoshua, vayomru elav, and again I'm reading it in monotone, al ya'al kol ha'am, don't bother taking up the whole army against them, Kalpaim ish, or kishloshet alafim ish, 2,000 or 3,000 people, ya'alu v'yakua ta'ai, will go up and they will smite ha'ai, Al tiaga shama et kol ha'am. Don't bother tiring out the entire army. Kimeyat hema, because they are relatively few in number. What's the tone here?
Arrogance.
Arrogance. Now, how? What's your name, sir?
Alan.
Alan?
Levine.
Yes, Mr. Levine. I think that there's great merit in what you're saying. How? What tips you off that there is arrogance in what they're saying? What words? If anyone wants to help Mr. Levine, we can. What's that? Okay, Me'at Hema. Me'at Hema. It sounds like a. It's good. It's a. There are nothing. This is a cakewalk. What else?
Oh, no.
Okay, don't bother taking. Right? Okay, don't take everybody. Okay? Okay, yeah, don't tire everybody out. I mean, that's what you're for. That's what you're in the army for, to get tired out, right? I mean, you know, you're supposed to do your job.
They're also sort of violating the classic parameter of, like, the person sent out to gather formation. Like, they're the chapash, they're like the lowly soldier. They're sort of inserting their own analysis of the situation. And typically, the one doing the mixed analysis is not the person who goes out and gets the
okay.
information.
Okay, I like that. That's very good. Spies are supposed to come back and just report what they found, present facts. And then the analysis and the prescription of what to do is left for the higher-ups, and they kind of take this on themselves. I'll mention one other thing here, too. Notice that they say, ke'alpayim ish o kishloshet alafim ish. Ya'alu v'yakuata'ai. This is very unusual in the Tanakh, to see this kind of, what's natural for us, hemming and hawing, 2,000, 3,000. You never find this in Tanakh. You know, that kind of real time, I'm not really sure, I don't know. And this also makes it seem like there's arrogance to this. It almost seems like they come in and they put their feet up on the desk and they go, it's a cakewalk. Me'at hema. Don't tire everybody out. Send 2,000. You know what? 3,000. This is all very arrogant. Now, we've touched upon a series of things that they do say that demonstrates their arrogance. But now I want to ask you to look again at Pasuk Gimel. What is absent from what they say? Totally absent. In other words, they say, we're going to win. We're going to win because they're very few. We're going to win with just 2,000. We're going to win maybe with 3,000. What don't they mention as a source of why they are going to win?
Hashem.
Okay, there's no mention of Hashem. You know, had they say, listen, you know, the Ribono Shalom, he took down the walls of Jericho. You know, whoever helped us defeat Jericho, he will help us defeat Ha'at. Then I could understand. But what's remarkable, and it's a long pasuk gimel, is they talk entirely about the weakness of Ha'ai, and they say not a single word about Hashem, which, after all, is the only source for victory in the first place. So how could this be? That by itself is a huge question. How could they leave out a Kadosh Baruch Hu? And I want to try to do a little analysis of what might have happened here. How is it that spies could be so derelict in realizing the place of a Kadosh Baruch Hu in these victories? I want to go back and look at the conquest of Jericho, right? That's Perek Vav, the story that precedes our story, and see what was going on there. And I think it'll give us a little bit of insight into maybe how these guys got it all wrong. Okay? In Perek Vav, Hashem tells Yehoshua exactly what to do, and he explains the whole thing about surrounding the city, and they have to parade around it, and they have to blow their shofars every day. Now, I wanna look at the very last thing that Hashem says. Look in Pasuk Hei, Perek Vav Pasuk Hei. Hashem says to Yehoshua about the events of the seventh day. Daya bimshoch bekeren hayovel. Keshomachem et kol ha-shofar yariyu kol ha-am tru'a gdola. And then there's going to be this one blast, and everyone's going to know, everyone has to blast on their shofar. And then, v'nafla chomat ha'ir tachteha The walls will come down. That's what we all remember from kindergarten. The walls came down. But then look very carefully at the pasuk. Ve'alu ha'am ish negdo. After the walls come down, then you will storm the city and there will be Krav Maga, there will be hand-to-hand combat. That's the prescription in Pasuk A. We all remember, oh, we think, how was Yericho conquered? Well, Hashem just collapsed the whole thing into the ground. No, no, no. Hashem brought the walls down, which then made the city vulnerable, which then allowed Am Yisrael to storm, militarily storm the city and engage in contact. Ve'alu Am Ish Negdo. Now, it seems to me that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to achieve here in this first conquest within Eretz Yisrael, a balancing act. On the one hand, to miraculously cause the walls to fall, so that Am Yisrael understands that nothing happens here but for the grace of God, that without a Kadosh Baruch Hu's help, we wouldn't be able to stand a chance against any of these enemies. But at the same time, to begin to train them to live on their own two feet and to defend themselves. And so it isn't that all of Yericho is swallowed up into the ground, it's that the walls come down, but then they have to learn how to be fighters. And so they are meant deliberately to then engage in combat, which they will win. Okay? This is in fact what happens if we skip later to Peret Vav. Let's look just at Pasuk Chaf. It says, Vayara ha'am, vayitka'u ba'shofarot, vayik ishmu ha'am et kol ha'shofar, vayariu ha'am tru'a gdola, vatipol ha'choma tachteha. Indeed, they blasted their shofars, the walls came down, vayal ha'am ha'ira ish negdo, vayil kedu ta'ir. They stormed the city, they engaged in man-to-man combat, and they captured the city. Okay? Now, if this is what happened, then let's try to piece together, how could it be that the spies in the next episode, when they're talking about capturing the next site, Ha'ai, are like, it's a cakewalk, it's simple, don't get anybody tired, and they don't even mention the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And it seems to me that what happened here was the following. There were two lessons that were meant to be learned from Yericho. The first is that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is the secret to all success. He brought down the walls. But secondly, that they were meant to begin to learn to rely on themselves and to fight and to engage in acts of courage and storm the city. Now, these are people that have been slaves for hundreds of years. These are people that had experienced powerlessness forever, for all memory that they had and the memory of their grandparents and great-grandparents. And now, suddenly, they're powerful. Not because the walls come down, but you can just imagine the walls come down, the people in Ai are totally frightened, and then Am Yisrael comes in, boom, pow, bam, and they come away victorious. And it seems to me that they must have been drunk with their own sense of victory. You can imagine the selfies that were taken there in Yericho. You know, standing over the corpses. Hi, Mom. You know, here I am. You know, Yericho, big victor, big victor. And when that is what happens, then people can become drunk with their own sense of power. And so it seems to me that this would explain why, when the spies are reporting to Yoshua, they say, it's going to be a cakewalk. We've done it all already. All you need is some good soldiers. We're great soldiers. Look what we did in Yericho. They were so drunk with their own success in Yericho, they lost sight of the Kadosh Baruch Hu's part in the whole story. Now, let's think. If these two spies got it all wrong, got it all out of balance, got drunk on their own sense of accomplishment, who else in the story might be guilty of that? In Perek Zion. Achan. Yeah, why? Why? How do you see that?
Oh, he, I guess, just doesn't think that God can see what he does, so he just takes it out.
Okay, okay. Let me just say one thing. In the ancient world, and also in the Tanakh, in most places, when soldiers go to battle, the reward for going to battle, for fighting for the king, is they get to take from the booty. Whatever they pick up, whatever they find, they keep. David does this. That's the norm. Okay. I want us to look in Perek Zion. Look what Achan says in Pasuk Chaf Aleph. He says, Vayere bashalal, I saw in the booty. What word should he have used? I saw in the Cherim, the Cherim. No, but in his eyes, this is booty. We conquered Jericho. It's ours for the taking. And now we can understand this wild medrash that Rashi gave us. And what did I see there? There was gold. There was silver. But first, the first thing that I saw was this Aderet Shinar, this Babylonian cloak that, according to Rashi, belonged to nothing less than the king of Babel. And when the king of Babel would come to Jericho, he would put it on. So Achan finds this cloak, and it says, you know, inside, the name says, you know, king of Babel, you know, his mother, the mother of the king of Babel. So king of Babel, you know, so everyone knows who it is. Ah, Achan picks it up. Aha! Whoever owns this place wears this. Huh? Well, I was part of the force that captured this place. I'm going to put this on. And I'm sure that it went up to here on him, you know, and totally was a misfit. And he goes, ah, perfect fit. I am a conqueror of Jericho. And so it isn't just the spies. It's also Achan that is caught up with this drunkenness about the power of having participated in a battle that ended in a victory, the victory over Jericho. Well, now we have the two spies, and we have Achan. And this is now enough to tell us that there is a spiritual virus that has infected the body of Klal Yisrael. That is to say, if the two spies are feeling this, and if Achan is feeling this, and they don't know each other, there's no reason to know that, think that they do, then probably there are a lot of people that are thinking this too. And now we can begin to understand why it is that the Navi says, Vayimalu bnei Yisrael mal b'cherem, Vayipach Achan ben Karmi ben Zabdi ben Zerach amate Yehuda. Because who actually took? Yeah, just one person took. Just one person took. It was really just Achan. But Achan took because of a spiritual virus that had invaded, that had infected the whole of Klal Yisrael. You know, sometimes, oftentimes, the things that we do that aren't so great, you know, we live in an age where we think about, oh, I choose what I do. I bechir hachis. Do good, do not good. That's all true. But we also happen to be sociological beings, social animals. The things we do, the things we say, are very much impacted by the things we hear going on around us. Okay? I remember, wow, eons ago, I taught at Nishmat. And I remember once, one day, a young lady in the Beis Medrash, she stubbed her toe. Wow, she let out a curse. It was really quite... And she was like, I can't believe that I said that. I haven't used a word like that in months since I arrived in yeshiva. Right? Because in yeshiva, everyone is so holy that no one uses terms like that. And so she hadn't either. Sometimes when somebody does something really bad, you know what? Yeah, what that person did is really bad, but probably there are a lot of people around him who were thinking of doing such bad things. They just have a little more restraint. But there is a certain attitude that allows things to happen. Things having to do with racial prejudice sometimes that are then taken into action. Sometimes sexual misaction, doing things wrong. You know, the way in which guys talk in the locker room, not in Jewish circles, but you know how locker room banter, you know, about women can be kind of degrading. And then the next thing, you know, they go to a party and a guy goes over, you know, crosses a line a little bit in terms of how he's relating physically to some. All right? So that guy did something terrible, terrible. He can get arrested. Only he did it. Maybe none of the other basketball players did it. But it all goes back to that locker room banter and the way they talk and the way they think. So this is a different way of thinking about our activities. We think of ourselves, oh, I'm on my own. I have bechira chofshis. It's all just about me. There are climates that are created. And the climate that is created here in Yehoshua, Perek, Bab, and Zayin is one where people are drunk about the victory of Jericho. So it comes out in the way in which the spies talk. And it comes out in the ways in which Achan acts. Achan did what everyone else was thinking. Just they didn't do it. Okay? Now I think that this can help answer a bunch of the other questions that we raised here in Yehoshua, Perek, Zayin. We asked about the battle. We said it says that 3,000 soldiers went up. That was Pasuk Dalid.
Vayalu min ha'am shama kishtoshet alefim ish. Vayanosu lifnei anshei ha'ai. They got there and they ran away. We said, why? There wasn't even a battle. Who can explain to me psychologically what happened? What happened?
Realize it wasn't so great.
Well, they went up. Oh, we're big warriors from Jericho. And they got to the walls of Ai. And the walls didn't come down this time. And now the doors open and the soldiers of Ai are coming out at them. This was new. Their bravado left them unprepared. And so when they saw real soldiers coming at them, away they went. There wasn't even a battle. They just started to run. That's what happened here. Now, who else maybe is infected with this virus? Yoshua. Why? Why?
Because he listened to the spies.
Excellent. Yes. We said in Pasuk Yud that Hashem is very short with Yoshua. He says, Kumlach, lama zata nofel al panecha, the way we would talk to a two-year-old. Why are you crying like that on the floor? And we say, Yoshua, what does he know? Why is he at fault? So what's your name, sir?
Gidon.
Gidon says, rightly, I think, you know, Yoshua didn't know what Achan did, but Yoshua heard the spies. He heard them say, 2,000, 3,000, al tiagah shamat kol ha'am, me'at hema. He heard that they didn't mention anything about a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Yoshua should have said, guy, I don't like the way you're talking. You know, we are going to win. I believe that. But, you know, where's your balance? Where's your understanding of where it's all really from? And Yoshua doesn't give them any tochacha from that. And maybe also Yoshua should have known that if something bad happened, where there's smoke, there was fire. And if they suffer a defeat, maybe something wasn't right. And so even Yoshua gets censured here. And now we can understand the Kadosh Baruch Hu's tochacha in what he says to Yoshua, Chata Yisrael. Yes, it really was all of Yisrael that was caught up in this way of thinking about what had happened at Jericho. V'gam lakhu min acherem, v'gam ganvu, v'gam kichashu. They're all taking, they're all denying. V'gam samu b'chleihem, they're all stuffing their pockets. They might as well all be stuffing their pockets. Only one guy took, but all the rest of them would have been quite happy to have the stuff in their pockets too. Maybe they were just a little bit afraid. Now we've answered all the questions here, except for one. That is the question about this elaborate process of identifying the perpetrator. That Hashem did not say to Yoshua, it is Ploni, Achan ben Carmi. Rather, let's get everybody together and let's have a good schwitz going here. Let's get everybody afraid. Let's pass by the Shevet of Nasi Reuben and Shimon, etc. Then let's get everybody from Yehuda and have a really good schwitz. And then eventually everyone gets said, why? And I think the answer is like this. We mentioned before that very often when bad things happen, people do bad things, it might be because there's a whole climate, a whole social milieu that allows this stuff, that breeds these types of things, and then one guy takes it a little bit too far. And we said Achan took it a little farther than anybody else did. But Achan is born of a certain climate. Well, who created the climate in which Achan was raised, born, which he lived? Well, there are a bunch of climates that Achan participated in. He is a member of Am Yisrael. We are all members of Am Yisrael. But of course, we all are not just members of Am Yisrael, we're also members, we come from different communities. We're maybe all members of, you know, American Jewry, more or less. We are members of, you know, Tinek, or the Five Towns. And this year we are members of Eretz Tzvi. And at home we're also members of families. But now I would say that to understand why the Schwitz, I want you guys to all look at this chart that I've made. Do you see this? This is what I call the pyramid of responsibility. What does it mean? This pyramid tells us who is responsible and to what degree. At the very top of the pyramid, who is the most responsible? Achan. But Achan comes from somewhere. And in the most immediate sense, where does he come from? He comes from the family that he was raised in. All of us do. All of us. We are so influenced by our family. That's Carmi. So the family of Carmi stays in there schwitzing until the last round of sending people home. They schwitz more than anybody else. But they take it out. Carmi or Achan is also part of the clan of Zavdi and of the major clan of Zerach, and he's from the Shevet of Yehuda, and he's a member of Am Yisrael. But the farther down you go on the pyramid of responsibility, the more removed it is, the responsibility, from the action itself. So all of Am Yisrael is responsible for creating this climate, but they're sent home quickly. And then you move up and up and up. And I think, friends, that this has enormous, enormous implications for all of us and how we think of ourselves. Because, as I said, we live in an age where we think of ourselves just as individuals. It's what I think. It's what I want. It's my Bechira Chavshi, my strengths versus my weaknesses. And we really don't give enough credence to the fact that we are social beings. And we are constantly, we are all living, friends, in a great big pot of cholent. You know what happens in a pot of cholent. You know, the potato soaks up the meat. And the meat kind of gets potato all over it. It all boils together. And that's happening to us all the time. Everything we do, we are being watched, and we are watching others. It happens at home. We watch our parents. Oh, I am so shocked when my kids remind me of certain things. Man, their eyes are wide open. All it is scary. It is really scary. So you don't know from that. Or maybe you do. You don't know how much, you just don't know how much you're being watched by your kids. But where it's really important, friends, is you guys start now on Chorev Zman is here in Yeshiva. It's here in Yeshiva, you know? You have an idea, I'm going to go into town tonight. Well, it's just one night, just me and a couple of guys. It's my business. Yeah, but you know, when people notice that you're not a night seder, that you're in town, then that brings down the whole level. Oh, I guess that's something that happens here, that you can just go into town kind of whenever you want. And I'm going to sleep in late in the morning and not come to Minyan. You know, it's the same sort of thing. And people notice, oh, you know, gosh, attendance is a little shocked this morning here. That lowers the level. And if everybody is at Minyan in the morning, you will not sleep late. You will not. You will be embarrassed to do so. And so it's especially in a program like this, which is not just about everyone doing their own thing, but it's really about creating a climate and an environment that our responsibility one to another is just enormous. Because, friends, you are being watched by every person in this room. And you are watching every other person in this room. And that's the lesson here of Achan ben Carmi. And now we can understand why it says Achan ben Carmi ben Zavdi ben Zerach l'matei Yehuda. Because what the Navi wanted to tell us was that he is the guy who did it, but he comes from all these concentric circles. And so it was very important to list his whole genealogy, his family background, his clan background, his Shevet background, and his national background. All of those contributed to different levels into who he was and to what he did. So what I've said in a daunting way, but it's an incredibly uplifting thing. You know, when you do something good here, truthfully, anywhere, but certainly in a very tight, closed environment, like a yeshiva program, you do something good, you don't know how much good you are spreading by doing that. By being serious in what you're doing, you are contributing to the climate. You are getting the dividends of everyone else seeing you and following your lead. So as you guys, about how much money? Probably next Sunday you start up again, or maybe later this week. Whenever it is that you start up again. So I hope, Mir Tashem, you should start up with great energy, and a real sense that together with, you know, it's my decision, who I am, that's all true, a greater sense of how we're all really living in a collective environment and what a great obligation that is, but also what a great opportunity it is as well. Thanks so much. And